Okay, so Hashem will go over some general halachos. Not everything will be negeah to everyone. Hopefully it will be something which will be negeah to everyone. So we'll start a bit with Hilchos Bedikas Chometz. So first of all, those people who maybe will be leaving for Pesach and become, there is a smach for this in Halacha, but it's become the dumb thing that one would like to sell whatever rooms, house, as it were, in order to avoid having to clean it and indeed having to do a bedika. So first of all, when to do this sale, there's a machloikis nachroinim. Normally, bedikas mechiras chometz takes place on Erev Pesach, so it takes place this year, Friday morning. If someone is going to be traveling probably beforehand, so would they be able to put down on a shtar mechira that they're selling whatever the house, let's say, and the sale would actually only take place the following morning, and wherever they are on Leo Bedikas Chometz, they have a Chavis Bedikas. So this is a machlokes between Achrinim. So there are some Achrinim who say that no, because at the time it's yours, you've got a Chavis Bedikas, whereas other Achrinim say that since certainly if you've already been Marasha, the Rav, and you're intending to sell it, so it's like no different to when you do Bedikas Chometz and you put it away to burn tomorrow. So while then here, by selling it tomorrow, you're going to be Mekayim, maybe your mitzvah of Tashbisu, and therefore you don't need to Bedikah tonight because you're going to be selling it tomorrow. So therefore, Mikradin, Mishnah Berurah says you don't have to do a Mechira on Yud Gimel on the 13th. You can rely on the Mechira that will take place on the 14th on Erev Pesach. But he says that Hamoicha b'Yud Gimel Odif Tzfei. So therefore, there are those who are particular, and I, amongst other Rabbonim, do two Mechiras. For those who wish, I mean, ordinarily the Mechir will take place on Yud Talad, on Erev Pesach, but for those who wish, there's a Mechir that takes place on Yud Gimel. Now, what form does this Mechira take? I mean, by the way, you sell a house, you sell all chometz within a designated area. So let's say the designated area is your house, and you're maskir the mokim where the chometz is lying to the goy, which also parts you from chavis bedika if it becomes muskir to the goy. The only thing is that can you therefore just sell your house and walk off and not have to do bedikas chometz at all? So the answer is you can't, because certainly if you've been living in a place within 30 days, there's a chal chavis bedika on the goof of the person, and even if the place where he's been living will not be his come Pesach, come Leil bedikas chometz for that matter, but there's a chavis a goof to do bedikas chometz, and therefore one has to be mekayim mitzvah bedikas chometz. And there are two ways therefore you could do that. Either if you're going somewhere, you could do mitzvah bedikas chometz where you arrive. So you travel on the Thursday. If you're taking a dira somewhere, there's no problem, right? You sell your house, you do bedikas chometz where you arrive. If you're lucky enough or unlucky enough to be traveling to a hotel, so then and you're traveling on the Thursday, then the same thing would apply. You know, you get the key, you go to your room, and you do bedikas chometz there. Hopefully, there won't be much there, and you can do bedikas chometz. You should maybe put out the psisim, the pieces of bread, and you make a bracha with a bedikah with a bracha. But if, let's say, you're going to one's family, so you're not taking charge of a dira per se, you're going to be given a room, a couple of rooms in somebody's home, so then it's not so clear that you can fulfill chavis bedikah simply in the bedroom that you'll be staying at. Some say that you can rent it notionally from whatever parent or family, and then it becomes yours, and you can do bedikas chometz there. But others are mafakpik on this. So the correct thing to do, therefore, is when selling your home, not to sell the entire home, unless, of course, you actually are taking a dira somewhere, in which case you can simply do that. But if you're simply being a guest somewhere, not sell your entire home, to leave one area which will not be included in the sale, and then that area you do have to do bedikas chometz. So if you're there on the Thursday evening, you will make bedikas chometz with a neir before you leave. If you're there only on the Wednesday evening, you'd make bedikas chometz with a neir without making a brocha, because the brocha is only on Leil Yudalid that you make a brocha. You leave a place, let's say a room that's relatively easily, not too many chorim or stockim there, not too many cupboards, etc. And you do lo'ir ha'ner b'dikas chometz in that place before you leave. And then you makam your chobas b'dika. The rest of the house, you, as we said, put down in the shtar that you'll be including in the sale, and that you don't have to do a b'dika on. If you're leaving on the Thursday, you'll want to hear a brocha. So if you can, from someone who is in the place where you're arriving, if you can hear their brocha, then that's better. And then you can go and taka and be boidik there, the room that you're staying in, either as their shliach or possibly according to some, it's your own chiyuv. But either way, you hear their brocha, and then you'll go and be boidik in that room. If you're leaving town and you're giving your house to somebody else to use, so then of course you cannot sell the house, because that's a contradiction in terms. So then you've really got a shikla bayah, because you're trying to do someone a favor, but at the same time you have the chobis bedika, and you've got to make sure that your house is properly Pesach cleaned. So again, what you can do then is say that I'm selling the kitchen and or whatever, dining room, bedroom A, B, and C. You'll have the hall, the staircase, and the access to room, D. And then the rest of the house, as it were, will be sold. You won't have a chobis v'dika there. And then those areas where the guests will be staying will be your chobis v'dika. You will have to ensure that there's no chometz in those areas, and you'll have a chobis v'dika. You can either do the bedika on those areas before you leave, or you can appoint the guests who are staying in your house to do the bedika on your behalf on Leil Bedikas Chometz, if they're there on Leil Bedikas Chometz. If they're not there on Leil Bedikas Chometz, then I think you have to do it before you leave, without a brocha, if it's not Leil Yudalit. That's be'erach the format for someone who's leaving home. The brocha bedikas chometz, first of all, if one has more than one area to be boidik, when I say more than one area, I mean more than one property, or you're going to your office, which also you've got to be boidik. So you make one brocha, the halicha in between is not mafsik, you don't have to make a second brocha. Something we mentioned in the mornings when we were learning Kitzah is that the Shaar Teshuvah already brings down that where one properly cleans thoroughly an area, so one can just be somech on a bedika b'havor or b'alma. And I saw in the Dirush of Mishnah Berurah that they bring that actually from Zalman Rabbi Yashar, one isn't actually so much searching for chometz once we know that the area has been thoroughly cleaned. One is checking that this area has been properly cleaned, and therefore one doesn't have to therefore exert all that much effort in actually looking into every nook and cranny. Once one has asserted that this area has been properly cleaned and was left as cleaned and no chometz has been there since the time of cleaning, then that's sufficient. When selling chometz, So, ideally, in addition to selling chometz, you need to erect a mechitza of 10 tefachim between where the chometz is and the rest of the household. So, ideally, therefore, it should be put in a separate room, and therefore you close the door, and the door is, of course, a mechitza of 10 tefachim. If you are just selling certain cupboards, where there's chometz sticker things, and the cupboards are not necessarily 10 tefachim, standard kitchen cupboards, unless you have a wardrobe cupboard, but standard kitchen cupboards are not 10 tefachim, etc. So then, meikradin, you know, if there's proper chometz behind this cupboard, if it's just dishes and things, then you know, you don't need to sell them in the first place as long as they're clean. Or if it's maybe things you haven't been able to clean so well, like kenwoods and things. But al kaponim, one would have to ideally put a mechitza of yud. The Maaseh Devel is makel on this, and they just tape it shut. But homia, one does need to ensure that it's properly got a hecker. And that, you know, lest one come, because the problem is, since it's always in its place where it is, and you haven't removed it, and you haven't erected the mechitzas yud, you might come to inadvertently open and use whatever's in there, and therefore one has to make a proper hecker. So, you know, it'll say on it, it'll be taped, you'll hear the sound of the pulling of the tape when you open the cupboard, and then that is maybe a bimkoim of the mechitzas asara that one would have to ideally do. In terms of what one actually should sell, so Mikra Din, it's clear that you can sell anything and everything which is homestick, including, you know, bread. Lemaisa, the takon of Mechiras Chomet was Niskan, you know, when people had alcohol sort of inns and such things, and they were standing to lose a lot of money if they would have to get rid of it. And therefore there are those who are makbid not to sell chometz gomor, unless it incurs a substantial loss, which is relative, I suppose, to every person what is considered a substantial loss. Whiskies, it's become a kubal, are considered valuable, and if one has, again, if it's a small amount of whiskey, I would say throw it out. But if it's, you know, a bottle of whiskey, then it's become a kubal, one does sell. Otherwise, it's up to every person's individual minug. As I said, you can sell chometz gomor, but if one can tailor it down so that one doesn't have any chometz gomor left, or only a minimal amount, which, you know, will make a nice fire on Erev Pesach, then, you know, there are those who are makbid not sell chometz gomor. What is considered chometz gomor is relatively straightforward. Bread, cakes, biscuits, and beer or whiskies are considered chometz gomor. But anything else which has got taruvas chometz is for sure one can sell. So that includes chashash chometz. So flour is not chometz gomor, can be sold. Pasta is chometz gomor, cannot be sold. Cereals, depends, right? So a wheat cereal like a Weetabix or a bran flakes is chometz gomor. Cereal like corn flakes is not chometz gomor, because although it has malt in it, but be'etzem it's only taruvas chometz. The main ingredient isn't the chometz. Most things, other than, as I said, cakes, biscuits, breads, and whiskies, are not chometz gomor. They're considered taruvas chometz and can be sold without a problem. Somebody asked me this year, so I'm just mentioning it in case it's negated somebody. Somebody asked me this year, what happens if you have a live-in, non-Jewish live-in? So I had a look, and it seems that the halacha is as follows. If they have a room which is theirs alone, You don't enter that room, it's their room, you know. So then you don't have a chayvus bedikah on that room, and you don't have to tell them not to bring in chametz into that room. It's theirs, it's part of the arrangement that, you know, they get lodging. And therefore it's ki'ilu, it's muskar to them, and therefore they can do as they please in their room, and you don't have to be bothered to get. If they have a room, however, which you also use, you frequent, whoever, you store things there, you go in, you go out. So then, A, you got a chavis bedika on that room, and B, one has to instruct the guy specifically that they may not bring chomets into that room. If they do, they're allowed to consume what they've brought in, but you have to, from your side, instruct them not to bring in chomets if it's a room which you also use as well. A worker in a shop should not bring in chomets into your shop, because that's the same as the room which you have access to. It's your shop, and the worker should be told not to bring in chomets. If the worker does bring in chomets, you don't have to wring his neck, but you have to tell him not to bring in chomets. Okay. That's a little bit about Mechira and Bedikas Chomets.
If you had a block of flats in a common areas, what would you do with that? Hello.
Well, the common areas. The common areas, that doesn't belong to all the tenants. I mean, not belong, it belongs to you, so it's. So does the flat belong to you, but I'm saying, but all the tenants have the rights, the common areas. I mean,
if it belongs to the girl's shop.
Okay, I don't think so. Any chometz there is not yours, it belongs to whoever it belongs to. You have no chiv achrayis on it. So certainly you're not either bali or bali motza. As far as chevis bedika is concerned, I can't imagine there's a chevis bedika. Okay, moving to cosmetics, medicines, toiletries. So basically, the rule is that. Any chomets containing non-liquid cosmetics, that's not the right way to phrase that, but creams, sprays, soaps, even liquid soaps, I meant not alcoholic containing soaps, there's no problem. If there is, I doubt there is chomets, but if there is chomets there, it's nistam achilas kelev, and you don't have to sell it, and you're allowed to use it. If it contains alcohol, which all perfumes, colognes, etc. do, and mouthwash also contains alcohol, so then it's more strict for a number of reasons. The alcohol can be reversed and can be still made edible, and that's what causes the scent to give a good scent. It's some people will drink it as it is. Various swaras are brought down in the voice scheme. So those, one cannot use unless they're authorized, they're on some sort of a list that they're not chomets derived alcohol. And B, one has to actually sell them. So one has to remove them from, you know, standing on the countertop, whatever, the bathroom counter, and one has to put them with the stuff that one is selling. Those should be sold. Then the various cosmetics that come into direct contact with one's mouth, like toothpaste and lipsticks, also, although again mi'ikradin then nishlam achilas kelev, and therefore there wouldn't be a problem, but nevertheless, since they do come in contact with one's mouth and could then go on other foods, so one only uses kosher lepesach. And as I said, mouthwash, not only should one not use, but one should actually sell because of its alcohol content. Medications also, even if they contain chametz, according to most poskim, there's not a problem because they're not edible. Even for a dog, they're not edible. And although normally there's a sort of achshavei, but here that doesn't apply because one isn't being machshav the chametz, one's being machshav the medicinal content, but the starch or whatever was used is not what one's being machshav. One simply has to be able to put it together, and therefore they can be used. The shagas ari is machmi. So if you can get an alternative, and there are lists, if you can get an alternative, you know, whatever it is, pain relief medication, which, you know, if there are some which are known to contain chometz, you can get a non-chometz containing one, then it's better to do so. But mikra, then you can take any. And with capsules, there's more of a problem. Had the capsule contained chometz, but Rav Adler told me that capsules don't contain chometz, they contain maybe gelatin, which is a different issue, but they don't contain chometz. And therefore, that is not a concern. If they're edible, palatable sort of things, medicaments, they've got some sugar coating, so then that's more of an issue, primarily because the maltose, which is one of the types of sugar used, is itself chometz. So A, it makes the whole thing edible, but B, it's an edible component in itself, the maltose, and that is chometz. So those should be avoided. If you can't avoid them, if you can't get an alternative, then you should wrap up in a piece of tissue and swallow it. The main problem is liquid medications, syrups, which if they contain chometz, then it's done in such a way that it should be edible. And therefore, they're rov la'achila, and they contain chometz, so that would be a problem. And therefore, one has to sell, if one has such medications, one has to sell them to a goy. One has to find some sort of alternative, primarily for children, one has to find some sort of alternative, some sort of soluble tablet, or sometimes you can get some suppositories instead of the liquid medications. And if you can't, so then there's two problems. One is keeping it at home, and the second one would be administering it to the child. So keeping it in the home, we said you should sell it and put it with your chometz stuff, and then it's not yours, it's the goy's. And then 2-3 times a day when you need it, you have permission from the goy to use it as necessary. Also, by the way, all the things that we mentioned, when you sell to a goy the rooms or the cupboards, if you need something from that room or from that cupboard, you can get it. You can't make a habit out of it, but if it's something which you need to access to, one can have access to it. So coming back to the liquid medication, you sell it to the goy, you put it with your chometz things. When you need it, you take it out, you use it, and you put it back. If you're buying it on Pesach, so then it wasn't included, obviously, in the Shtar Mechira, so then you should not be koyne it. So when you get it from the pharmacy, you have in mind that you hand in your prescription, you pick up the thing, I'm not being koyne it, so it's still the pharmacy's. And then, again, you're using it, but it's really the goy's. That's as far as the ownership is concerned. And as far as administering it to the child is concerned, there's a second problem, because you're not allowed to handle chometz. And here you're handling chometz. So, ideally, this in level of preference, there's three levels. Ideally, one should give it to another child to administer it to the younger child. The first preference is to give it to a non-Jew, to a goy. If a non-Jew cannot be, it's not practical, then you give it to another sibling, a child, etc. And if that's not possible, then you can do it yourself, only in the presence of another adult. So there should be two adults, Yidden, there, in order that one should be, as it were, shomer, that the one who's handling it doesn't come to eat it. All this, by the way, of course, only applies to regular household issues that arise, not any choli shesh by sakana, of course, is if any shash sakana and any choli, then of course you can, you know, give as necessary any chometz that might be needed. Okay, so that's basically covering the cosmetics and the medications. Kitnius. So we know that there's a minig. B'nei Ashkenaz don't eat kitnius on Pesach. This is a broad discussion on what exactly falls under the category of kitnius. Furthermore, there's a broad discussion about the oils produced from kitnius, whether that is forbidden as well or not. So there are different customs on this. Rav Padva, and if one doesn't have a minhag to the contrary, paskens that cottonseed oil and sunflower oil are all considered problematic because they are from kitnius. The only oils which can be used on Pesach, therefore, would be from walnut or hazelnut or olive oil. None of the available, I think, margarines or mayonnaises in any of the stores contain any of these oils. So by definition, that would preclude purchasing any or using any of those items because they don't contain these oils. They contain other oils, canola oil or the other oils, which are all considered kitnius. But many people pasken that either because they don't consider the actual item to be kitnius or because they consider the oil not to be problematic. Many people pasken that sunflower oil is okay, cottonseed oil is okay. So if one has such a minig, then by all means one shouldn't change and one should use these oils. As I said, so it's difficult to give guidance for someone who has no minig whatsoever. I can only say that Chesho Eved paskens that these things are considered kitnius and therefore should be avoided.
Should be the default be the other way around? Isn't there any default to be machmer on it? Is that not?
Because
default should be that it's okay on that
outcome. Why should that be the default?
Well, I don't think it should be okay
No, I understand, but let's say for argument's sake these things are considered kitnius. It's a chiddush that because one isn't, because the gzeir of kitnius was because it might be grain or because the flour looks similar to wheat, you know, to the five degonim, their flours, and therefore that was, so it's a chiddush that when it's in its liquid form and it's been properly checked and we know that there hasn't been any grain mixed in, so one can be makel. But I'm saying that I think is the pashtus is that any derivative from kitnius would be forbidden. Those who say that these oils are permitted, okay, the truth is that some say that maybe that they aren't actually considered the kitnius.
Where do we call it for these things being?
Yeah? Yeah, I mean, it's not something he made up, of Chesh Vefer. No, well, I'm saying, where's the Makor? The Makor is that they were considered in Eastern Europe to be kitnius. So in America, first of all, America is a very large country. No, but I'm saying if you go to any of the killers, you know, which have got traditions, I think they all avoid these things. But in America, Rav Moshe had a very large influence. In America, I don't mean to shtel it too, but I'm saying in America they have chol of stam as well. And in America, so Rav Moshe paskened that sunflower oil is okay. So therefore, the default maybe is that, you know, Rav Moshe said it's okay, so it's okay. But in Eastern Europe, for sure, I mean, I can't quote to you exactly who, but it was considered that these oils are not to be used. But having said that, and out of respect for Simcha's observation, you know, there's a difference maybe between what, you know, one would do in one's own home and one is, you know, perhaps eating at the parents or in-laws. Well, parents of her would be the same minig as oneself, but let's say in-laws. So then, you know, I'm not necessarily saying that one has to take one's personal minhagim and use them in such situations, you know, where others have got other minhagim. But I'm just saying that if somebody asks me, I haven't got a minig, I've got no idea, you know, should I use something like, oh, I'll tell him it's a machloek saposkim. But in London, the prevalent psak is that of the kadassia that one should avoid using these oils. Related to kidneys, there is corn flour and rice porridges, which are mixed for children, which are kidneys for sure. Rice is kidneys for sure. So children are considered for the purposes of this cholish ein bo sakana. That's what they're used to, that's their diet, even if they're healthy, but they're considered cholish ein bo sakana. So one shouldn't change their diet, one should give them what they're accustomed to. When it comes to preparing, one should have set aside a separate bowl, separate spoons, in order to make this preparation. Ideally, Mr. Brewer brings down, one should first of all avoid, if possible, rice. He says rice is the worst of the lot. One should use corn flour, if one can. And also, one should put them in boiling water, not obviously give it to the child when it's boiling, but prepare it with boiling water, because that has a koyach that stops it being machmitz, and then allow it, so that means a bit of an advanced preparation. It's called chalita. You sear it with boiling water, and then after it's cooled down, you give that preparation on the separate bowl with the separate spoons, and to try and wash them up also, not in your main kitchen Pesach sink, but somewhere else, you know, in the bathroom sink, where you're not going to be doing the rest of your dishes, etc.
Is there a preference in these ones with the hechsher,
preference over what? My answer is that generally I do believe that it's preferable to get anything possible on Pesach. I know it's an additional cost, but to get anything possible with the hechsher, even though, you know, it's the same item, you know, the sugar and whatever it is which is there without the hechsher, but preferably one should get anything with the hechsher. If it's going to be a change of the child's diet, you know, he's used to the cow and gate, and here you're going to be trying something new which you don't know if he'll be so happy with, so then I'd say, you know, stick with what you know. But if you know that it won't make any difference, then I would say it's better always to get something with the hechsher. And by the way, on the subject of hechsherim, I'm not into the subject of hechsherim, and you know, not saying one over another, but whatever hechsher one considers satisfactory from, you know, from the good Yisrael Dikah, American hechsherim, etc., one has to read carefully the packet. Like you said, you know, sometimes they rak la'oich ne'kitnius, or sometimes they'll say, you know, it's kosher le'mahadrin, rak li'mois hashana, and then it'll say, you know, and it's kosher le'pesach, but that's not the mahadrin. So And then there's the chiluk between the Coke and the Diet Coke. What's exactly the chiluk? There's some ingredient in the Diet Coke, apparently, which doesn't qualify for the Mahadrin of Rabbi Landau. So one has to look at every individual item, packet, whatever it is one is purchasing, to make sure that, you know, just not just look generally at the shelf, check every item to make sure that it carries the hechsher that one is looking for. Okay, so now a little bit of kashering. So I'm not going to get too involved in kashering, utensils and things, because by and large, for anyone who's making Pesach for the first time, it's an outlaying cost. But by and large, one should purchase new utensils for Pesach. So whether it's cutlery or whatever you need, you know, in the kitchen, you know, sharp knives and whatever, you know, one shouldn't take your year-long knives and start kashering them. The only real thing in terms of what you use during the year that you should be using on Pesach is your silverware, which even if, you know, you never used it with hot in the first place, nevertheless the Ramah says one has to kasher them, even if you're just going to be using it for cold. So, you know, whatever, and that, you know, there are available places where one can kasher. In terms of utensils, one really should have kosher, you know, in today's society, it's possible to get everything for not all that much, which is new. Generally, in terms of materials which can be kashered versus those that can't, so metal, stone, wood can be kashered. Glass on Pesach, for the purposes of Pesach. Earthenware, china, porcelain, enamel, formica, plastic, one is machmir on Pesach, Pyrex, all these things are not materials that one can kasher for Pesach. So it's basically metal, wood or stone that one can kasher for Pesach. Okay, so therefore, I'm not going to go into the stages of how to kasher, but you know, the general guideline would be not to use something for 24 hours before you take it to do any kashering, not to use it for 24 hours, and then it says anyway that one should be mamid bal Torah, who's boki bedina agola, over kashering. I'm talking about now kashering of utensils, and therefore, if one has the utensils to kasher, one should go along, and you know, they'll ask you any pertinent question, and look at the keli to see whether it's kasherable. It has to be clean, has to be not used for 24 hours, and then you know, one can go ahead and take it and have it kashered. I'm going to stick to the actual hardware, fixed parts of the kitchen, which is the, you know, the sinks and the ovens and the stoves and the counters, etc. Okay, so it depends. Now we'll start with the countertops. If one has a stone countertop, so it can be kashered. If one has a formica countertop, then it can't be kashered. In the past, I went through the stages, but I'm just going to cut through to the unchtashura, which is that b'chol oifen, one should cover all one's countertops. And if one is covering one's countertops, then if one is using a thickish cover, so a thickish cover meaning something that will not tear, so it can either be thick silver foil, or it can be an oil cloth, or it can be a cardboard, but something that will not tear, then one doesn't need to actually do any pouring onto one's countertops, because the covering is sufficient. If one cannot get hold of a thickish cover that will not tear, one is going to be using something that might tear. As I said, b'chol ofen, you should cover, even if you crush it. But if you're going to use something that might tear, so then one has to cut to the tops beforehand. So in the past we spoke about taking a even meluben, or with an element on the kettle whilst you pour. But what I'm saying tonight is that is not necessary if one is going to follow the kashering by a covering. So all you need to do is boil up a kettle. The kettle should be a regular year-long kettle, as long as it's not a kettle in which you know you've cooked any chomet. But most kettles one doesn't use for cooking chomet, you use it for boiling water. Or Shabbos kettle, same thing. So you take a regular year-long kettle, and you pour it over every space of the countertop, and then you dry it all up, and then you cover the whole surface, and that is sufficient. So again, if it's a thick covering, you don't even need to do that. And if it's a covering that might tear, you should first pour the water and then use the covering.
If it's a thick covering, then you have pieces of it.
And you have?
It's a few pieces. Consider it a few pieces.
So, as long as the pieces are touching.
The same, but that means it can move. You have to tape it
together. Okay, so I'm saying if you tape it together so it's not going to move, then it's not going to move. And if it's going to move, so then it's maybe equivalent to something that might tear. So then you should cover it first before you cover it. So that's what I'm saying. In the past, I would have said you should use a corded kettle and keep the element still depressed when you're pouring, which is correct if you're not going to be covering your countertops. And it's a smooth countertop which doesn't have any grooves. But Lamasa, a corded one. Yeah. But Lamasa, if one is going to cover and one should cover, then I think you can use a corded one. But it has to, you see, the problem is that you can only use it for, you know, it boils, right? It's a big kettle, it boils. And you pour it, but then, you know, a while later it's no longer boiling. I mean, the truth is immediately it's no longer boiling, but with a cordless. No, with a corded, you can keep it on the whole time. It has to be boiling water that you're pouring, Bikitsa. So once it's cooled down, then you've got to reboil it and then pour it again. So it's better if it's corded and if it's tucker kept on the whole time. But Meikradin Iru Klirishin doesn't have to be. It can be from a Klirishin, water that's been boiled in a Klirishin, and you pour it, as long as it's still boiling water. I don't know if it means that it's on a rolling boil, but as long as it's still very, 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 very hot water, then that would be okay. If it cools down somewhat, then you've got to reboil it. Okay, that's regarding the tops. The sink itself, so again, depending on the type of sink, if it's a porcelain sink or something like that, then you can't kasher it. And then you'd have to put in an insert. If it's a stainless steel sink, then you can kasher it. And me'ikra din, if you do, you won't have to put in an insert. But nevertheless, it's commendable, even with a stainless steel sink which you've kashered, to put in an insert as well. How does one kasher a sink? In the case of a stainless steel sink. So, you don't use it for hot for 24 hours. You dry it so it's dry, and you start pouring from the basin, the bottom, and then you work your way up to the walls. You might not be able to do it with one kettle, but you start pouring from the bottom. There's something I should mention beforehand. You first got to clean it properly. So clean it properly includes the drain cover. You've got to clean that properly. It's sometimes difficult because it's a couple of pieces which are welded together, and in between it's difficult to clean, so one has to pit and try and clean as much as one can and spritz liberally whatever one can, so that if it hasn't removed something, it gets nifgam and down the actual drain itself to be poigam anything that's there. And then when it's all properly cleaned, you start from you dry it, and you start from the bottom, and you work your way up, and you do the sides as well. The actual drain lid, which prevents the food going down there and blocking the drain, is very difficult to clean, and ideally one should buy a new one for Pesach use. And then, as I said, if it's stainless steel, you don't need to cover the sink, but if one can, one should get some sort of a insert as well. Obviously you leave the drain exposed, and the rest one puts an insert or tries to cover.
If you only use separate bowls because you only have one sink, do you need the insert as well?
What do you mean by separate bowls? A bowl is an insert, but that is the insert.
Yeah, that's enough for the insert, no problem with pouring the water down and all that.
The water's going to go through the same hole.
Yeah, I think there's no problem with anything coming back up or anything like that.
So for that, you have to, you know, spritz some Dovar HaPoigim down there. And hopefully, you know, anything that will then come up, if it does, is nifgam and doesn't asa.
What's the logic of starting the bottom? If you start from the bottom, then most of the...
The logic is, because if you start from the top, then the water from the top has run down and has become cool, and then it cools down the hot water that you're pouring. If you start from the bottom, so then you're going up on the dry surface. But if you start from the top, water's run down, and as you get further down, you're already pouring on an area that's got cold water lying there, and that cools down the power of the hot water that's being poured.
Does the water have to be boiling, bubbling
as you're
doing it, or can it be boiled recently or too hot to touch?
Right, so in the case of the sink, if you're not going to put an insert in, then it does have to be, then for sure it has to be bubbling, and it should have to be done with the element on. Because there you would need the Evan Mulubenes, which you can say an element on is considered the Evan Mulubenes, but if you're not going to be covering the sink, then for sure it has to not only be bubbling, it has to be, the coil should still be on. If you're going to be putting an insert, then I don't think it has to be on. It has to still be just off the bubble. You know, so it's difficult to give a... You can take it off and pour, but then you can't do that for, you know, 45 seconds, because after that it's already... Cool. So. I use my Shabbos kettle.
Yeah, but it comes up cooler, doesn't it?
Which is plugged in on the highest setting, so it's always boiling. And then I just you know, move it around like that.
What about the tap?
And the tap, one should pour it from the top of the kettle on top of the tap, and also Rabbi Shimon Eder writes, run the tap on highest heat, so that, you know, from the inside water runs through it as well.
Before or after?
Before or after what?
Cutting the sink.
Doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, but you said come out, there are enough pushes that before the tap.
Doesn't make a difference. When you're ready for cuttering, you can start with the tap if you want. You know, but then when you finish with the tap, you know, dry the bottom and then do the sink. Or the other way around if you want. I think there's a machlokes about that, but I think we say hot, any hot.
Does the kettle have to be full?
Why does it have to be full? No, it doesn't have to be full.
Is that
normally one shouldn't the halach is that normally one shouldn't use a chometz like a keli to do the kashering. Right? Although if it's any ben yomer, one could, but the minig is, the Sharatin says, to use something which is kosher lepesach and to kasher it beforehand and then do the kashering with it. However, a kettle is not considered a chometz like a keli because you haven't cooked any chometz in it. It's simply been around the kitchen. And you know, you might have poured it even into some hot pasta, which is, you know, whatever steam went up, but it's not b'di'eved, it's not considered something which you've cooked chometz in, and therefore you can use your year-round kettle. Did I say you should use a Pesach one chatchila?
No,
I didn't say that. No, I think you should use your year-round regular kettle. I said I use my Shabbos kettle. I didn't say I use my Pesach kettle. Huh? Okay. An oven. So there's a machlokes whether a regular oven can be kashered for use on Pesach. If one has a self-cleaning oven, that can be used. If one has a regular oven, there's a machlokes whether it can be used or not. So lechatchila. Right, I'll be honest with you. In the Hakol of Tovshin Samaches, it says you can kasher your oven. In the Hakol of Tovshin Ayin Dalet, I mean, I got that Tovshin Ayin Hey 1, it says you can't kasher your oven. So I don't know what happened between Samaches and Ayin Hey. But the emes is it's a machlekes aposkim. Many poskim hold that an oven needs libun chomor, and a regular conventional oven doesn't reach that heat of sparks flying, and therefore many poskim hold you can't. So lechatchila, certainly if one has a Pesach oven, or if one can invest in a small little, you know, oven for use on Pesach, then that is better. But in the event one needs to use one's oven, so then it's kashered as follows.
I'm talking about a normal oven?
A normal oven. Self-cleaning oven is not a problem. A normal oven, you would, first of all, olive base is to clean it out properly, make sure it's properly clean, which is particularly, you have to pay attention to where the fan is, and again, use the spritz, and around the rubber, around the door, you know, to make sure that it's properly cleaned. And the same would apply to the trays, make sure that they're properly cleaned. And then you would put it in the oven, put the tray back in the oven, turn on the oven on its highest setting for approximately 40 minutes. And this achieves libun kal, which according to some poskim is sufficient because our food doesn't sit on the walls of the oven or on the floor of the oven, they sit in dishes, and maybe chometz is a terebola, in which case libun kal is anyway okay. So one can do that if one has to use one's oven. Lechatchila, even after having done that, Erev Pesach, that means before Pesach, one can bake, use the oven without cover. On Pesach, because there the halachos of bittul are more severe on Pesach, one should only, if one is using one's regular oven, try and use it where the food is covered. Obviously, in its own dish. That goes without saying. And make sure to cover. So browning doesn't work if your food is covered. You'll have a pale chicken. It gets cooked. It just won't brown. But that's what the poskim advise if one is using a regular oven. Despite having kashered it, on Pesach itself, one should keep all food that goes in it covered. And then finally the stove, the hobs. So if you have a gas stove, right, so you clean. That's the number one, is the cleaning, the elbow grease. You got to clean properly the whole thing, the pan rests and everything. You got to clean the burners. You got to clean it all properly as much as you can. You know, anything that's blackened, you know, whatever you can't remove. But whatever you can, you use these caustic sprays to clean. And then the actual burners, you simply turn on the burners, and that's okay. The pan rests, one has the kasha in one of two ways. Either you put them in the said oven, so you stick them into your oven, you turn on the oven on the highest setting, and that achieves a libun kal on the pan rests. Or, if it doesn't fit into your oven, you can take a blech, if one still, these things still exist, and you take a blech, you put them on top of the pan rests, you turn on however many burners you have there, two or four. The whole thing gets very, very hot underneath, you've got to be careful. Yeah, it can be very dangerous. Can melt, knobs if you're not careful, if the blech is going too far over. And that also serves as a kashering for the pan rests.
How long?
10 minutes.
Huh? In the oven, and the other, all the other.
Under the blech for sure, no longer than 10 minutes. If you're putting it in the oven, then maybe a bit longer, maybe than a half an hour. A blowtorch works, but the problem with the blowtorch is that it's very arduous because every area has to be Kadesh Akash Nisrach, which means that you take... I once did this when I was in one of my apartments, and, you know, I was going around with a tissue, and it took forever, because till you get it hot enough for a tissue to be Nisrach, and then you got to start with the next piece, and then with the next piece, you know, you're lucky if you finish before Pesach. So it's very, very difficult to do it with a blowtorch. Just out of my experience, maybe I wasn't good at using it, but... Yeah.
Yes.
It does. It's got to do with physics, but it's you got the burners and it spreads evenly, and it gets very, very hot, very, very fast. No, just where the pans will rest, right. The top bits.
Not on the base.
No.
No.
And then you've got the bottom of your stove, right? Whatever, that's metal. So that you've got to cover with some thick silver foil, obviously cutting a hole in, so that the burners can come through. But that's for any spillage that might go over and then will still be connected to your Pesach soup, whatever. And you know that might be mavir the blias which have previously spilt. So that should be covered with silver foil. So basically, it's in the reverse order. First of all, you clean it all very well. You cover the bottom with silver foil. You kasher the pan rests either with the blech method or sticking it in the oven. And the burners itself, you simply turn on, and that's kasher.
To put chicken wire netting over the burners, over the thing, then the pots go straight.
Yeah.
Is that a problem, or you need to kasher it up?
I don't think so, because it sounds to me that would be okay, because the whole problem is if the pots are sitting on the pan rest, if they're sitting on something else, then an achlamo. Electric cookers, there's two types of electric cookers. There's the old type, which I don't know if it exists anymore, where you had rings. And then there's a ceramic or halogen type, which are like, it's all a glass sort of looking surface. So the actual cooker burner bit itself is very straightforward. Again, after the cleaning, you simply turn it on, whatever. In the case of the halogen, it gets red hot, and that's it. It's kashered, and it's not a problem. Or others, you turn on the higher setting for a short while till they get very hot, the hottest they can get, and then that's considered kashered. The problem is that the bits in between remain totally cool, literally cool to the touch. And that therefore is in no way being kashered. So you have to do one of two things. You could pour hot water there, but that's a bit not advised. It's likely to break the thing, b'kitzer. Or you could cover it, but again, I'm not quite sure of the advisability of that. I don't know what the manufacturers will have to say about that, if you cover the bits in between. If you can purchase or get something which raises the pots, because what's the problem? The problem is that the pots are larger than the burners, or many pots anyway, are larger than the burners. So although the burner's being kashered, but the pot sits a little bit beyond that. And that bit hasn't been kashered. So you have to, you put something on top of the burner, a metal disc, which apparently shuttlers have, and that raises it. So then, even if it's sitting beyond, but it's not actually touching it, it compromises, obviously, its cooking efficacy, but it still gets very, very hot, obviously, enough to cook. And it's raised, and then that saves you having to kasher the bits in between. I would still say, if possible, to try and cover, at least not very close to the burners, but to cover a little bit further away, cut a larger hole in the burners maybe, but just in case there is a spillage. I don't know. I think it's sufficient if you're doing the raising method to do that without the covering in between. Okay.
If you have a spill on there,
yeah,
and that goes on the surrounding stone,
yeah,
and then you try and wipe that, and you put your spot in the sink.
No, but by the time you're wiping up your shmata, your spills, your spill, you know, is not hot anymore, and you know, you can stick it in your sink, but it's not. I mean, as Rabbi says, your shmata maybe will be a problem, but I'm saying it's not gonna. It'll be dirty, but it's not gonna, I think, cause a problem. It's not gonna transfer any of the bleus in that spill over to other things. I don't know. Okay. I think those are the main points of kashering. If you've got a hood above the stove, you know, then one should cover that as well, because steam rises to that hood throughout the year, and then on Pesach too, and then brings down bleus that will have entered that hood. So that should be covered as well. Fridges and freezers, meikar adin, if they're cleaned properly, you don't need to do anything. But nevertheless, it is the minhag that any shelf where you will have food, not a bottle or a can, but you will have food, should be covered with some shelving paper, so it shouldn't rest the actual food on the same shelves, in the same way that one covers any other surfaces in the kitchen, and one should cover one's fridge and freezer as well. Okay, I think that's basically. I'll just mention just one thing. B'negeah Lil Pesach, second night Yom Tov is going to be Motzei Shabbos, so the Seder of Kiddush is Yak Nahaz. Many ladies' families have a minhag that everyone recites Kiddush, not just the man. Everyone, the men, women, children, everyone recites Kiddush. But here you have Havdalah. So there's a question, should the lady recite the Havdalah bit? Because ladies are Pturim, it's Machlokes, but they might be Pturim Havdalah, in which case it would be a Hefsek between the Bo'er Pri HaGofen and their subsequent drinking. So there's Machlokes. In the Kedashia booklet, they say that the lady shouldn't recite the Havdalah bit. So she said, you know, and then the husband should go on with the Hamavdil Ben Kedesh L'Choyl, etc. Hamavdil Ben Kedesh L'Kedesh, and the Boyer Meir Oesh. And the Shachion, anyway, the lady doesn't recite, because she's recited that by Lechtzinden. So she should stop after the Kedesh. But Rav Shlomo Zalman brings, Rav Shmuel Shabbos Chosse brings, that it could be that it's okay for her to do so. They can be mamshich on themselves, the chiyuv, like maybe by every Havdalah they can. So I'm not giving you the bottom line. I'm just saying that there's a room to maybe instruct your wives not to say the Havdalah bit. But on the other hand, Rav Shlomo seems to be noted that it would be okay even if they did. He doesn't say they should. He seems to say that it's okay if they do. So it says you should keep the trays in.
Mind.
But it says in the bedroom, you should not keep the trays in.